So we have a couple of guests today from Integrity Wealth Solutions. They're a tiered flat fee asset management and financial planning firm focused on helping physicians, dentists, individuals, and small business owners in a transparent and equitable manner. They adhere to low-cost, tax-efficient portfolios based on the client's comprehensive financial planning goals and have helped clients in all stages of life. They're a great solution for those that don't want to do it themselves or pay the high cost of hiring a traditional financial advisor. Their wealth management fees range from $1,250 to $3,750 a quarter, which includes both investment management and financial planning. So you can reach them at www.integrity-wealth.com or at 303-716-5777. Today we have Justina Welch and Clint Thomas on here. Welcome to the White Coat Investor Podcast.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Sure. Can we start out with just an easy softball question for you? And I'd like to hear from both of you on this one. Why did you become a financial advisor?
Well, I'll start. I became a financial planner. I started working when I was 16 for a financial planner. And in that experience, I really admired his relationship with this client. It was a feeling of being a member of a family. So I kind of, from that experience, set my path towards becoming a financial planner. And a lot of it comes to, I like problem solving. I'm a bit of an overthinker. So I love helping people navigate the complexities of the financial markets, but also helping them set the correct path to achieve their goals and really just building those long-term relationships and really wanting to be a trusted and reliable member of their financial team. That's why I became a financial advisor.
Yeah, you know, for me, I always just loved the side of investing, and really that's what drove my initial dive into the profession. But as I developed my career and have moved along in my career, I've really developed a strong sense of just wanting and enjoying helping people in areas that, quite frankly, a lot of people don't enjoy doing or don't want to do themselves. And so for me, it's really just a strong sense of wanting to help people figure things out that they might not be able to figure out on their own or simply just not have the background for, and really being able to have a strong desire to help people plan and execute what they want to do and help them achieve their long-term goals.
So what do you guys see as being unique about your company or your practice compared to others?
I would say what's unique about our company, one factor is Clint and I are a partnership. And when we set out to form Integrity Wealth Solutions, we wanted to approach wealth management and financial planning differently. So we created a unique tiered flat fee asset management compensation structure, which was designed with our clients' interests and success in mind. Partnered with that, we wanted to create our firm's investment philosophy, which is also centered around the cost and tax-efficient portfolio management, also helping the client retain more of their investment growth. In the terms of our financial planning process, it's a cornerstone in everything in that we want to align our clients' financial goals with insightful strategies that fit their individual circumstances. So we build a comprehensive, customized, and integrated financial plan that can evolve as the client's needs grow and transform, and also help add value by helping that client maintain focus throughout the inevitable ups and downs of the market.
Awesome. And you mentioned your fee structure very briefly. Why did you decide on going with a flat fee?
You know, we looked at the landscape that's out there in terms of the different fee models that are prevalent in our industry. And of course, the one that you see most often is a percentage of assets under management type of model. And both Justina and I worked under that model previously. And through that experience, working with both pre-retirees and retirees, looking at the amount of fees that were being charged to those clients, it just didn't seem like it was, quite frankly, a fair compensation model, especially when you get to the larger portfolio amounts. We looked at that and said, okay, is there a better way, or a way that we feel is better anyway, to be able to make a living, obviously, and provide high value, but at the same time, be more fair for the client. So for us, managing $1 million versus $3 million is not a lot different. What does bring up some differences is the planning work that needs to be done with some higher level portfolios. So the way that we did it is we tiered our, we call a tiered flat fee structure, where we have some pretty wide bands with some flat fee. But as you go up in portfolio value, the fee does increase a little bit to compensate for the additional work that's typically required for some of the higher level planning needs that can come up. So that's how we came to that system. And we feel like it's a good mix between wanting to provide a fair value for our clients, but not penalize them for adding dollars to their portfolio or seeing their portfolio grow like you would under the traditional AUM model.
Awesome. Well, let's move into some of the listener questions and see if we can answer those together. Our first one comes from Colton. This is a family where there's a dental student married to a PA. Let's go ahead and listen to that question now.
Hi, Dr. Dolly. Thank you for all you do. My question is about a couple of financial steps that my wife and I need to take. I am a third-year dental student, and she is about 7 months away from graduating from PA school. This last year, I read your financial boot camp book and want to take the proper steps before she gets into a job. And I was wondering, in the field of PAs, would it be better to get disability insurance beforehand, or is that something that would be provided by somewhere where she takes a job? Also, we're thinking of expanding our family and having a baby within the next year or so, and need to take that into consideration for disability insurance, I believe. What are your thoughts?
Okay, so basically they're talking about should PAs get individual disability insurance, or should they wait to see what an employer offers, especially if there's a new baby coming? One of you want to take a stab at that one?
Great. Yeah, I'll take a try at this. In my opinion, looking at getting coverage now, especially before they start a family, oftentimes there's specific plans that have our advantage to graduating doctors. And so I don't know specifically in the PA world if there is that as well. But you just never know if that employer is going to offer disability. And then also the advantage of having your own individual policy is if you do change jobs, you can obviously take that individual policy with you. I think the question also is that they're looking to start a family relatively soon. So they're looking at possibly getting the insurance or looking into getting disability before getting pregnant is the underwriting aspect to disability. Usually they'll issue a policy, but I think once you get after the third trimester, then it gets a little bit more difficult. So it's always better to look into it earlier than later. My caveat on that is we don't sell insurance. I do have a background in insurance, so I would refer this to a disability specialist.
Yeah, for sure. But it's definitely harder when you're pregnant, particularly at the end of the pregnancy. And if you have some medical problem come up while you're pregnant, you get a pulmonary embolus or you have a stroke or something, that's definitely going to affect whether you can get disability insurance and life insurance and what you pay for it. So if you got a pregnancy coming up, it's time to buy it now. You know, I wouldn't put this off at all. Even if you think you might be getting the best policy in the world from your employer coming up, I would probably lock in an individual policy anyway. I always like having at least part of your coverage be individual, so it's portable, number one. But two, they're usually better. You know, there's a lot of terrible group policies that employers offer that just really have terrible definitions of disability, I've found.
I would agree. Yes. Sooner the better. And then definitely having your own policy that you can control and is portable.
I mean, I'm not totally against group policies. I had one for, I don't have any disability insurance now. I've canceled mine, but for a long time, I had both a group policy and an individual policy. And the reason why was my individual policy wouldn't pay if I was disabled rock climbing. My group policy did. And it was amazing how much cheaper the group policy was. But the price went up every few years, and it wasn't as good, strong of a definition of disability. So you got to be a little bit careful relying only on a group policy for sure. Okay, let's take the next question. This one's from Jerry, who's a tech worker, with a question about a non-qualified deferred compensation plan.
Hi, Dr. Dahl. My name is Jerry, and I'm 41 and work in the technology space and currently earn in the mid six figures after stock and bonuses. I also pay about $180K in state and federal taxes. My company recently offered a non-qualified deferred compensation plan. I assume this plan is similar to the 457 plans you mentioned on your podcast. That is, the money I defer is in trust with the company, but not free from the company's potential creditors if the company declares bankruptcy. I figure that if I defer $200,000 per year, I can avoid nearly $100,000 in taxes on my yearly tax bill. The non-qualified deferred compensation plan offers a solid selection of Vanguard funds and DFA index funds. As a general matter, I've always sold off my stock compensation upon vesting on the grounds that I do not want to double down on my personal risk by pooling both my salary and investments into the same company, in case the company goes Enron. However, using the non-qualified deferred compensation plan seems to be doing just that, minus the risk of stock price fluctuation. My questions are, how do you decide whether the company you work for is safe enough to hold a considerable amount of your personal wealth, and how much of your personal wealth are you willing to risk in such a plan?
All right, what do you think about that? Should Jerry defer $200,000 a year into this plan? What would you tell him if he asked you this?
Well, first of all, it's a good problem to have, right? If you have a high tax bill, it typically means you're doing okay, but certainly it's understandable to want to reduce your tax burden. And one of the ways to do that, if it's available to you, is through a non-qualified deferred compensation plan. You know, one of the things that is noted with a non-qualified deferred comp plan is the lack of liquidity. And as the listener alluded to, the concern around the company itself, because the security of your investments is directly related to the company itself. So this is somewhat of a difficult question to answer with the limited information we have, because the main question here is the financial health of the company. Is it a startup company? Is it a public company that's doing well? Is there concern over a buyout or a merger that could affect the status of the deferred comp plan? And so one of the things that should be looked at is simply the financial health of the company and where they stand in terms of a going concern, and also, again, looking at, is there a concern around a merger or a buyout? Because sometimes when there is another company that comes in and takes over the plan, there could be a forced trigger that causes a disbursement that could trigger the tax implications.
Yeah, here you go. Here's an extra $600,000 in income, right?
Exactly. And that's something that you obviously are trying to avoid. And so the chance of bankruptcy for the company, and then also the funds are not protected in the event that the employee files for bankruptcy either. So there's definitely some things to look at and make sure you're familiar with the particular plan. The listener's question really goes into how much is a good amount to put into something like this. One of the things, or one of the rules of thumb with investing in your own company's stock, whether it's a 401k or otherwise, a general rule of thumb is capping that at around 5 to 10%. So while it's not an apples to apples comparison, you could use the same rule of thumb in this case, capping that deferred comp amount to around 5 to 10% of your total portfolio if you want to defer some tax, but at the same time, not put too much at risk. So that's the general guideline I would give with the information that we've been given.
Yeah, it's a limited information for sure, which is probably pretty different from what you usually get people's entire financial life set in front of you, so you can really dive into the details and know exactly what's going on. The other thing we didn't get in this was the distribution options. You know, like with a non-qualified 457 plan or a non-governmental 457 plan, you know, some of them have great distribution options that you can spread it out over 10 or 20 years or whatever. And some of them, as soon as you leave, it's all distributed. And so I look at those, and if the distribution options are terrible, I wouldn't necessarily use the plan at all, or I'd put only a trivial amount in it. But I get pretty uncomfortable putting an amount like $200,000 into a deferred comp plan. That just seems like a pretty significant part of somebody's financial life to have subject to your employer's creditors, I think.
I agree. And I think that when you look at the options that you have available to you, just simply investing those excess dollars into a low-cost, tax-efficient brokerage account, while you're paying taxes on that income and you're not able to defer it, it still could be a good compromise between the two options versus putting so much at risk.
Yeah, I'm not sure we gave Jerry an exact answer to his plan, but I think probably the answer, Jerry, is something less than $200,000 a year into that thing and know the exact details of how stable that company is and how good the distributions and investment options in it are. You know, I would think one of my employees that wanted to defer $200,000, you know, at the White Coat Investor, would be crazy to do that, right? There's just way too much risk in this company to be having that kind of deferred compensation sitting there still with the company. So if their tech company is as unstable as the White Coat Investor, I'd say, maybe 1/10 of that would be appropriate to put into the plan.
Right. Agreed.
All right, let's take our next question. This one's from Arian, who's got a question about 529 plans.
Hi, Jim. Thank you so much for taking my question, and I appreciate all that you've been doing for the high-income professional community. My question is in regards to 529 plans, and I realize this is a bit of a loaded question, but my question is, from birth, how much would you expect to save monthly so that your child is prepared for any future educational endeavors? Obviously, we don't know what those endeavors may be from birth. I was just wondering if you had a ballpark range to save monthly, assuming that you're starting, you know, right from the beginning. I've also heard that front-loading these accounts can be a good idea as well to let the compound interest build. And so I guess the second part of the question would be, if we were to front-load the account, how much you would recommend front-loading it with, and then maybe being done with it at that point per child. Thank you so much again, and I look forward to hearing your response.
All right. So what do you think about these two questions? How much would you put in there from birth? And if you front-load it, how would that be different?
Yeah, so what I would say, the average annual cost of college at this point, and this includes public and private universities, is about $32,000 a year. So if you assume 6% inflation starting to save annually from birth to 18, in a moderate investment that's returning, let's say, about an average of 5.5%, you would need to save approximately $9,000 a year. So that would be, his question was how much monthly. I would say ballpark would be $500 to $750. That's if you want to fully fund based on these assumptions. So that's where you know, what's comfortable with what your cash flows are as well. We always encourage our clients to make sure that their own retirement goals are being funded, and then also looking at your funding for your children's education. His second part of the question was front-loading the 529 plans. If you look at the assumptions that I just provided on a present value, you would need to front-load about $138,000 to be fully funded by age 18, which is that's a lot of money to be able to lump sum up front. So in the terms of front-loading, again, I would look at your cash flow. So if it was something that you're comfortable doing over maybe 5 years or 10 years, but unless you have a big liquidity event that you can front load, I would obviously encourage to really look more of spreading it out and save other places. That's quite a bit of money to put up front if you're not sure if even, you know, your children go to college.
I'm pretty amazed how often I see this question. How much should I put in? And I'm like, how can you do that? I couldn't do that when my kids were born. I was a resident with the first one. I was in the military with the next two. I'm like, if I was going to front load something, it'd be like $1,000, you know? I just didn't have the money when my kids were born. So I'm amazed that some people do, but they certainly do and want to pay it all up front. But I also run into lots of people that want to start saving for college before they've even paid off their own student loans, before they've even really gotten started with retirement savings. Do you find there's a rush by clients to start saving for college for some reason, really in front of more important priorities?
Yeah, we do. We come across that quite often, especially, I think, new doctors, because they've just got out of school and then they have these student loans, and I feel like, and they're starting a family, and they want to put their children ahead, get them ahead than where they are. I feel like there's that kind of emotional tie to it. But, you know, we really want to look at, you know, have you funded your retirement, your other goals, you know, buying a house, paying down debt, student loan. And then if there's a portion that we can put towards 529, but I wouldn't make that the number one priority right off the bat.
Yeah, I totally agree. Well, thank you, Justina and Clint, for coming on the podcast.
Thank you for having us.
You can get more information from them at 303-716-5777 or on their website at www.integrity-wealth.com.